Lots going on these days, and in Peru, they've decided to open up their division to re-examine UFO cases. What does this all mean? Alejandro Rojas joins us in a moment. We'll talk about that and some other special UFO cases on Coast to Coast AM. Alejandro Rojas is a radio host for Open Minds Radio. That's part of the Open Minds production team, where he is also a research specialist focusing on UFOs and related phenomena. Now, for years, he was the official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network as the director of public education as well. And he has been a UFO and paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade. Alejandro Rojas, back on Coast to Coast. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Looking forward to this. It's amazing when these countries finally decide to go a little public, Alejandro. And in Peru, their Air Force is reopening its UFO department. How come? What's going on there?
Yeah, this is exciting. And especially, you know, South America is really incredible because you have a lot of countries that have government agencies that are investigating UFOs. Peru started this organization back in 2001, but over time it kind of fizzled out until it pretty much went dormant in 2005. But it started up again because they've had a lot of sightings hitting the media out there in Peru, some exciting stuff going on out there. So they've had so many sightings that they've decided they better open up the organization again and take a look at some of these sightings that are going on that are making a lot of news.
Do we know what kind of personnel they're going to have in this department?
We do. It's going to be a civilian organization, but it's actually under their aerospace. It's called Department of Aerospace Interest, which is kind of interesting. On our side, the closest thing would be Air Force Space Command. So it's going to be under them. It's also going to be in conjunction with their space division, which is essentially like their NASA. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be made up of civilians, although the guy who's heading it is a retired Colonel Chamorro, who was with the Air Force, who actually founded and started this group in the first place. And he's really into this topic for many reasons, including really he was a witness to one of the most famous sightings ever that happened out there in Peru in the 80s.
Tell us about that sighting, if you can.
Yeah, this was at the La Jolla Air Force Base in a town called Arequipa in 1980. And essentially, the way he says it is a little more exciting than what was known before. The gentleman who was flying the jet craft, the jet plane that followed this UFO, his name is Commander Oscar Santa Maria, and he's been like at the citizen hearing. He's been in Leslie's Kane book on UFOs, and he's told his side of it. But according to Chamorro, there were 1,000 to 2,000 witnesses, including him, because this event took place while they were standing in formation, like they do in the mornings to get their orders. And so 1,000 to 2,000 men are out there. Everybody at the base spots this object over the base. They check radar. They check everything. They don't know what it is. They figure it's probably a balloon and some sort of reconnaissance craft. And they think, you know, something's taking pictures of the base. They had some Soviet planes there that were still secret. So they decided they better fly someone up there to shoot it down. So Oscar Santa Maria gets in his jet, flies up there to shoot this thing down. He gets it within range. He shoots at it. He sees that he hits it, and most of his bullets are right on, and he figures this balloon's just going to explode and the gas is going to go out of it, but it doesn't. The thing doesn't really move. As he gets closer, it starts to move up. So he goes around again for another run, and this object essentially kept flying to evade him, and he did this for a period of time until he ran out of fuel. He finally came into land. He said, well, should I go up there and get it? Because they could all see it. It was at a much higher elevation at this point, thousands of miles higher, because it kept doing maneuvers going higher and higher to evade him. And they said, well, I don't think you're going to be able to get to it, so we'll just leave it alone. What's interesting about the case is really it became known when there were FOIA requests to the DIA here in the United States about UFOs that it came more public, because there was a file on this where the DIA was kind of briefed. They at least looked into the gist of the case. They had their dates wrong, but they had kind of what had happened correct. So it showed that the Defense Intelligence Agency in the United States was interested in this case. And since then, we've had Oscar Santamaria doing talks. We've had Chamorro, who was in charge of the Peruvian UFO group, talking about it. So it's become a much bigger deal.
Well, that's a great case. And, you know, this whole thing would be tantamount to our Air Force opening up Project Blue Book again, wouldn't it?
Yeah, imagine that. And almost even better, because it would be, okay, we're opening up Project Blue Book. We're going to have it under Space Command, which is a pretty secretive organization already. And then we're also going to have these guys work with NASA, and they're going to work together to figure out what's going on. That would be amazing.
It sure would. Well, let's see what happens. When do they open it up?
They opened it up just last week. Their official, and this is what was funny. When I first found this story, I found it on the site Inexplicada, it's called. A man named Steve Corrales runs it, and he keeps an eye on these South American goings-ons out there and speaks with their researchers. And he was sent this this notification about the organization starting. And I thought that maybe it was a joke that they had hoaxed him, because it talked about there being a meeting about the Nazca lines and extraterrestrials, and that it was going to be sponsored by this Department of Aerospace Interests. So I went to their website to confirm, and I couldn't find anything. It took me a long time till finally I found something. And none of the Peruvian news was really reporting on it. It took a little while for them to report on it. I don't know if maybe they thought it was a joke also.
Huh.
But more information came out that this DNA, this Space Command equivalent, the man who was in charge of that was actually calling all the armed forces. He was calling the media, telling them that we're going to reopen our UFO organization. We're going to have this talk on the Nazca lines and extraterrestrials, and that's where we're going to do it. It's going to be at our offices. And finally, it hit enough people where more news starting to come out. And I knew Corrales is a very responsible ufologist. I trust what comes from him. So it turned out to be true. And so now we posted our story. More stories have been posted. And then they sent out the real official press release on the 17th, on Thursday, saying, hey, tomorrow is when we're going to do this. And they gave a little bit more information, essentially saying, we're going to reopen this organization. There's only one change. The first letter in the acronym is no longer O. It used to be called OIFA, and now it's DIFA. So they changed from office to department, but that's the only change. Otherwise, still going to have the same head, and it's going to work similar to other organizations out there in South America, because one thing that happens out there is they do work together closely. So, in fact, Chamorro, when he was charged with opening this department in 2000, was working with the Chileans, who have their own organization, CEFAA, where they organize UFO or investigate UFOs. It's organized a little differently in that CEFAA works mostly with their equivalent to the FAA. It's not as military oriented, whereas this new Peruvian one is more military oriented.
Do the reports in Peru, Alejandro, do they, any of them, surround alien abductions of individuals?
That does happen. And in fact, one of the bigger cases that they looked into when the OIFA was active was a case called it was in a lake area. And essentially what had happened in this case was there was a teenager with his younger sister, and they were at a lake, and this craft came down and I guess beamed a beam that of heat at this kid who was getting a boat ready so they could go fishing. He told his sister to run and go get help. She ran. It wasn't very far, and the villagers could see this happening. They all came, and they started shooting at this craft, and it went away. When Chamorro says when OIFA came out to investigate this, that the villager said, this is nothing new, that these things do come and abduct people. And that, you know, they even had a name for them, the Pelicaras, which is called the face killers. And they also call them Pishtacos, which is essentially a name for a boogeyman out there. So they kind of had this legend about these things happening. So that wasn't a case where they felt possibly it was related to abduction experiences that was going on out there.
We're with Alejandro Rojas, of course. Tell us a little bit about Open Minds Radio, Alejandro.
Yeah, Open Minds. Actually, we have a podcast, which I host with a friend of mine, with one of my colleagues there. But we also have a magazine that we publish bi-monthly that we're very proud of. We've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now, and it's gotten very popular. For instance, a lot of this comes from an interview that we had, an exclusive interview with Chamorro just recently, and it's in our July-June issue of 2013 of the magazine. You can get them at Barnes & Noble. We also run the largest UFO Congress or conference in the world, and that is the UFO Congress, of which you will be joining us, I believe, at our next one this coming February.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. We're looking forward to having you there, too. So that's a lot of fun. So that's what keeps us busy every day, all day. And on the website, we are posting stories just constantly. Every day, we're posting UFO stories from the media. We're keeping up on the latest news, such as, you know, what's going on in Peru, and we're delving down and getting all the details so we can share it with everybody.
Alejandro, this community of UFO investigators seems to be so strong these days. Are new people coming in, or are they still the folks from years gone back?
You know what's funny? As far as investigators go, it does seem that there are less people coming in a little bit at a time here and there, but not at the rates it seems like they used to in the past. And it is a little bit of a scary time, to be honest. I mean,
sure,
I've been doing this. I know that the bio that I have on your site says almost 10 years, but that bio I think was from when the first time I was on your show, which was like 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this whole time I've gotten to know all of the researchers, and a lot of my mentors are passing away. Jesse Marcel Jr. is a good friend of mine.
Oh my goodness.
His website. He's passed away. Others are getting older, too old to even participate in a lot of the activities. So it is a little disconcerting that, you know, there aren't as many people coming in to replace the old-time really hardcore investigators as there used to be. Luckily, some people here and there are popping up, writing books, which is a great start. But, I think... just because the community, as you mentioned, is tight-knit, and there haven't been so many new people coming in, and it's all of pretty much the same people going to the conferences, you know, you become like family. You know you're going to see, you know, these different researchers or people next month or the month after at a conference or at a lecture somewhere. So we get to know each other really well, and it's almost like family.
They really are. They're hard, dedicated people. I mean, they don't make a lot of money doing what they do,
right?
But they just want to get the answers.
Right. Some people spending a lot of their own money doing what they do. But, yeah, just wanting to get the answers. And I think the good thing about, you know, all of us spending more time with each other is that, of course, there's a wide variety of opinions, a lot of differing opinions. It used to be, you know, people had different camps and they wouldn't really talk to each other and they disliked each other because of their varying opinions. But I think now people are more open to the differing opinions and people are a lot more civil in that, you know, for instance, I can think of a conference recently where on one side of me is Kevin Randall and one side is Stanton Friedman and both Roswell Research.
I love Stan.
Yeah, and they don't see eye to eye on everything, but are able to work together and discuss, you know, still, I think, a little more cordial than UFO researchers have been in the past.
Stan's been doing this for about 50 years now.
Yeah, and he's absolutely amazing. His mind is so sharp, and he's been such an excellent champion for, you know, this sort of research to the media. He's just that he's great with those one-liners. He's witty. He's a lot of fun.
What would you say would be your expertise?
My expertise, you know, I think that over the years, you know, I have a great opportunity to be able to work in this field for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we write in-depth stories in the magazine. We accumulate so much information, especially about what's happening right here, right now. So I think that that's what I would be able to do. My job is a journalist, so it's getting the news out there. But also knowing what's going on right here and right now, I think how what we all are doing, the entire community is doing, is affecting society and the community and popular culture. And I think also watching the evolution of popular culture and how it adapts to these phenomena.
You know, it is amazing how the population has made this shift to the belief system now. It is huge. I still don't think governments, though, will come out and tell us.
I think it's going to take a lot more people to get the government to do it. But that's, you know, that's kind of step five. I always think, you know, going to my personal feeling on it is going to the White House and knocking on the door is kind of putting the horse before the cart in that, first of all, if you get the door open, you're going to have a bunch of people, I think, saying, I don't know. Second of all, you know, they've got to be motivated to listen. And how do you motivate? You get the people. So one of the things that I think is really exciting right now is all of the celebrities and the news agencies who are willing to talk about this and who are willing to put themselves on the line and say, hey, I believe in this. This is something important. There's something going on. And especially when it comes to celebrities, I think, you know, they have a lot of followers. I don't really think things change too much from high school where everybody's looking at the cool kids. What are the cool kids doing?
Yeah.
And that's what the celebrities are. And we take our social cues from celebrities. We know from polls that a lot of people are open to these ideas, but they're not feeling comfortable to discuss them in public. When you have celebrities willing to go forward and discuss these things outwardly, I think then you have people saying, hey, you know what? This is still okay. I can go out and still be the cool guy at work and be able to talk about UFOs and things. And I think that's really exciting.
I think so, too. So what are the things you're doing these days?
Writing stories like crazy. So, you know, luckily, like we talked about with South America, you do have these organizations. You have Chile, you have Uruguay, you have Argentina, all with official UFO organizations, keeping up with them and what they're doing. You have Brazil, which is occasionally releasing some information, but you have a great researcher out there, A.J. Gevaert, who's
working
on getting them to release more. And they've had some success. They've been able to get their government to release some UFO files. Luckily, recently also, this is something really exciting, speaking of celebrities. And to be honest, I don't know how much I'm supposed to mention of this, but the Kardashians, keeping up with the Kardashians, they just released, I think in the last couple of days, that on November 3rd, their episode's going to be called Close Encounters of the Kardashians.
We're going to be back in a moment. We'll talk more with you. I want to get into crop formations with you, Alejandro. We'll be back. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Alejandro Rojas as we talk about UFOs and other worldly things. And then we're going to, of course, continue talking to him when we come back. Alejandro Rojas with us. Alejandro, let's talk a little bit about crop formations and what's going on there. We lost a great researcher with W.C. Levengood, didn't we?
We did, yeah. That's unfortunate. Just recently, luckily I'm good friends with Nancy Talbot, who keeps me up to date. And Levengood has always been, or at least lately, kind of under the radar. He's always been kind of a shy guy where he's not out doing the lecture circuits or anything. But he was part of an organization called BLT Research. He was the L in the BLT, and and Nancy Talbot was the T. And she's the last surviving of the acronym, because the B was for John Burke, who has also passed away a few years ago. And I think this was a premier, you know, organization when it came to the science of crop circles. A lot of what we know as the anomalous science of crop circles was done by them. Levengood being the lead scientist, he's a biophysicist. And they even, you know, had gotten a grant from Rockefeller, Lawrence Rockefeller, to do some work.
He was into this in a big way, wasn't he?
Oh, very big way. In fact, you know, he funded a lot of the big projects that we know about. He got scientists together to talk. He funded Colin Andrews and some of his crop circle work. He got together what was kind of a precursor to Stephen Greer's executive briefing, but his own briefing document that had to do with some of the best cases of UFOs. So, yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. And he did a lot of lobbying of the Clintons. And it could be, we don't know for sure what Bill Clinton's motivations were, but we do know he looked into Roswell and UFOs and some of the Air Force responses during that time were probably due to Clinton's prodding. And so Rockefeller had a big impact.
Well, he sure did, and he's no longer with us. Has anybody been able to replace that?
Definitely not. I guess the closest would probably be Bob Bigelow, who, of course, George Knapp.
George knows him well, and he's been on our show.
Knows him well, and you guys have had him on, and even recently. And the guy's a genuine nice guy. There's so many conspiracies around all of this, and I was working with MUFON during the time that MUFON began working with Bigelow, and it's really sad because he's had a hard go of it working in the UFO field just because of all of the negativity that he gets, even though I think he's done some great work.
I think so, too. What do you think these crop formations really might be, Alejandro?
It's difficult to say. I know it's frustrating for some, but a lot of the newer ones are done by humans. We've had a great decrease in the number of crop circles this year in England, and that has largely been attributed to a lot of the crop circle fakers giving up and retiring, because there have been some prosecutions out there where some people have been fined and been getting in trouble for making the crop circles, and that's why they think there's such a reduction. There's been a reduction in quality. In fact, lots of the locals, it's being reported by like the Daily Mail and other English news stations or outlets that they call them crap circles this year because they've been so terrible. But there's been a reduction, so no doubt that a portion of them are human-made. I think Colin Andrews estimated something like 80%. But then, of course, there are those that are more anomalous, and the phenomena goes back for hundreds of years. So who or what? I think it's interesting, speaking of Bigelow, just this the other day, I was interviewing Sean Alexander on
Good
Skinwalker.
Yeah.
And we'll probably get that up on YouTube soon, because he was involved with the Skinwalker Ranch. And essentially, their idea was that we don't know what happened. What happened was so enigmatic that whatever the phenomena was smarter than us and tricked us and was two steps ahead of us, even though in this case there were a bunch of PhDs. I think a lot of the phenomena is often like that. It seems to be enigmatic by design and two steps ahead of us, and it seems like that's the case with some of these anomalous crop circles.
There's the anniversary coming up where a witness talked about the Pascagoula situation, 40th anniversary. I remember that 40 years ago. It was an incredible case. Two fishermen, right?
Right, yeah. Two fishermen in Pascagoula, Mississippi. They go to fish, one much younger than the other. One was a teenager. And essentially they see this UFO that lands at this pier. And these characters, these eight creatures come out of it. And these creatures are really strange. This is in the 70s. This is in 1973, while there's a big wave of UFO sightings. And a lot of these UFO sightings actually had entities. Sightings of entities involved with the sightings. And this situation, these creatures were much more strange than has ever been reported, possibly. They had these kind of faceless heads with these spike type of things coming out. They had claw hands and wrinkly skin. They came over, they levitated out to these two gentlemen. They levitated these gentlemen into their craft, but they were benign. They weren't malicious. They did have this mechanical eye that did this examination, then let them go. And they report that they felt, you know, that these things weren't mean or evil. They just came to examine, and they, Charlie Hickson, one of the older gentlemen, said he felt that they wanted us to know they were peaceful. Now, Charlie Hickson went and he talked at UFO conferences, and he had talked about their experiences. Another unique event that had happened was that the police tried to trip him up because they went straight to the police. And the police put a tape recorder in the room and then left the room thinking, oh, these guys are going to, you know, unwittingly say on this recorder that, oh, we tricked the police. But instead, they heard the guys were really afraid. They're like, what are we going to do? Oh, my gosh. They're praying, and they're talking about, you know, these police have to believe us because this is so scary. And so the police began to believe their story, not that there was much that they could do about it. So the person we haven't heard from, though, is Calvin Parker, the younger gentleman. He essentially shied away. It got a lot of press in the 70s, and he didn't like that. He shied away from the attention. He says he even changed jobs when they found out who he was. There was some time in the 90s where he did a couple interviews with some television shows, but then he kind of faded into the back again. But, yeah, for the anniversary, somehow the AP, of all people, got a hold of him and did an interview. So they did a video interview with him, and he essentially confirmed the same story he had before. He also talked a little bit more about how he shied away from publicity. The AP also interviewed one of the policemen that, you know, had interviewed them. And this policeman to this day says, you know what, these people, I know when people are fooling me. These people were genuinely scared. They were afraid. You could tell that in the recording that we left in the room. And so it's an anomalous, another one that's extremely enigmatic, and it just leaves you scratching your head. But a great case.
It was one of the best. Now, you tell me, in your history of UFO research, what's the one case that stands out for you?
The one case that stands out for me, and I always come back to, I guess, just because I know all these gentlemen so well, and I know it evolves, but to me, it's really probably Rendlesham. And the reason why is that largely to do with Lord Hill Norton, who took it so seriously, and he was, you know, Admiral of the Fleet, a very important person, who was really fighting for the UK government to take this seriously. But also because of Charles Hall, you know, he's essentially the highest ranking military officer who witnessed a UFO event, who was out speaking about it. And he has not changed his story. He stuck by his story. And the significance of what they have to say is extraordinary. In that, you know, one of the key aspects of at least what Holt witnessed was an orb, a craft flying over the munitions area and beaming a beam down there. Holt doesn't talk about it much, but we now know what some people had revealed when they technically shouldn't have, that there were not supposed to be, but there were nuclear warheads on that base. So that's, you know, certainly an issue that should be of concern. But Holt says the Air Force kind of treated it like a hot potato and said it's the UK's problem. The UK, according to official sources, you know, said that we don't want to deal with it either. And Lord Hill Norton was very vocal that, hey, we have to do something about this because this is extremely important. Of course, people suspect there were things going on in the background at levels that are not as visible to the public.
That's right.
But who knows? It's hard to say. Halt does believe that, though. Halt believes there are organizations that are paying attention to this stuff that were beyond, you know, what he could ever find out about, even as a colonel, a deputy base commander at the time, and later he was a base commander at Rendlesham. He now is very open that he believes that that this whole secrecy is being managed.
Why can't we get that physical evidence that we really need?
You know what? I think that's a great question, why we can't get the physical evidence. And I have a feeling that it kind of goes back to what Alexander had said about this phenomena being two steps ahead of us. I think, you know, when it comes to SETI or scientists, astronomers, they talk about, well, if they were here, why wouldn't they do this or why wouldn't they do that? But who knows? Who are we to understand what their motivations or methods would be? You know, it's like an ant looking at us and trying to figure out why we do what we do. They just don't have enough information or the cognitive ability, and neither might we. So it's difficult to understand the motivations, but it seems as though that if we are being visited or whatever this phenomena is, if it wanted us to have physical evidence, it would. We don't at this point, and I personally feel that that's by design.
What do you think could very well be the next big case in terms of UFO research? Is there anything on the horizon?
You know what? You know, Nick Pope, I really like what he has to say, that this is events-led, and it really kind of leads to just at that same point, and that it seems like there always are next steps. There's always something happening. There's always a big case that's breaking, you know, whether it be Phoenix Lights, the Chicago O'Hare sightings, the Stevensville sightings.
I think so, too.
There will be another one. What it will be, it's hard to predict. When it will be, it's hard to predict. But there will be something else. Somehow, the phenomena seems to keep this at least in our purview, in our consciousness.
When you were with the Mutual UFO Network as the director of public education, what did you find, Alejandro, that people wanted to know? What were they curious about?
Well, people always, and even now is the case, people want a packaged, wrapped, clean answer.
They're not going to get that.
They're not going to get it, and they get frustrated when they don't get it. They flock to the people who do give that to them, but I always, I haven't found that the people who feel that they do have all the answers really do, and personally, I've always felt that those, and many of the luminaries are this way, those who say, I'm just as perplexed as I was the first day I started investigating this stuff 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, those are usually the more wiser mentors that I have found who actually do have the most insight.
Well, there's no question about that. Did you ever investigate the Barney and Betty Hill abduction case?
I personally have only read about it like others. Luckily, okay. I had, you know, one of my mentors has been John Schuchler. He and also Kathleen Marden, who are very close to the case. Of course, Kathleen being the niece. So I've spent a lot of time with her.
Yeah.
She's an extraordinary woman. In fact, when I became a MUFON field investigator, she was the one who was grading the test for MUFON. So she graded my test. Since then, we've become friends, and I think it's an extraordinary case. That is another one that is an amazing case.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, there are. When you stack them up, you know, there are a good, at least over the decades, you know, a good at least a dozen, two dozen cases that are just extraordinary, that are incredible in nature. I mean, we talked about this Peruvian case. A lot of these that are rock solid, that, you know, even the government has had interest and often don't give an answer, just don't come to a conclusion themselves.
Have you had a chance to look at Stephen Greer's latest film on the little tiny, whatever it might be?
Actually, that was one of our big stories because luckily we had a little bit of insight into that creature. And because it was originally found in Chile or Peru, can't remember the exact details, but where it was found. But it had been researched. It was actually in South American newspapers. It's already done its cycle, essentially, with the South American ufologists. And they had actually put it to bed, for the most part, that it was fairly accepted that it was a fetus, a mummified fetus. And that's because even though it was just an eyeballing it, you know, an eye exam, their experts in that arena had said, yes, this is a mummified fetus. It seems as though, personally, that's where the science has gone to. I was one of the few people who got to converse with the Stanford scientist who has done the research for Dr. Greer on this stuff. He is certainly convinced that it is human in nature. He thinks still that it might have some rare deformalities in them. Exactly. Other experts in mummies feel that have since come in and said that actually a lot of those bone anomalies that you're seeing are due to the mummification mm-hmm. and the age of the bone.
Whatever so, it was real at one time.
It certainly was real. They think perhaps it was an aborted fetus was mummified in that desert. It's not the only type of body that was found in the desert. In fact, Ripley of Ripley's Believe It or Not has some photographs of a very similar, they called him Attaboy because he was found in the Atacama Desert, the same place where the Greer, the Atacama, you know, body was found. And so Ripley had one of these things for a period of time that he was kind of showing and showcasing for a while. But so we had a lot of people coming to our story for the backstory. And I really think that it's important. Unfortunately, I think that was one shortcoming from the video that they should have given this backstory.
Well, that's a good point. We're going to come back and take some phone calls with you, talk a few more UFO cases as well.